going to try something different now with the synopsis. Kristen, who was on the podcast last week, is doing sort of an interactive synopsis with some of her friends who are also avid watchers of Supernatural. I hope you enjoy.
Summary for episode 3.2, The Kids Are All Right. Now, when we first see our intrepid group of heroes, we see Sam inside a diner talking to Bobby on the phone, trying to find a way to free Dean of his curse. Which I think is great, because it shows that Sam's still trying, even though Dean's like, hey,
you're gonna die. Yeah. And I love that Sam hides it from him.
No, I'm just ordering pizza.
In a diner.
Yeah, Dean comes up with a case where a guy fell on a table saw, and Sam doesn't really think it's an actual case.
Because it's just one instance.
Just one instance doesn't really, you know, go, yay, Supernatural, that's weird. However, Dean just really wants to go see Lisa Braden, a yoga teacher. The bendiest weekend of his life. Gumby girl.
Apparently that makes him pokey.
And, oh god, can anyone else just say how awkward it was when he first went and saw Lisa and she was like trying to get rid of him?
Leave. He just kept giving her those eyes.
And he like had that goofy smile on his face.
I loved Dean's sexy face that he had on the whole time.
Of course, then when you met her friends and they're all like, Dean, best night of my life, Dean. And at this party is where we meet Ben, which is Lisa's son.
Who is exactly like Dean.
And this whole weekend that Dean had with Lisa was 8 years ago, and Ben just happened to be turning 8. Ben is exactly like Dean, so...
He likes AC/DC, he eats a lot, he likes girls, chicks.
Granted, though, there's one thing, though. You can understand looking like your father, but if you've never met him, having all of his mannerisms is kind of a long shot.
Well, but yeah, they were pushing it a little bit too much, the writers were, but, you know, it was still really funny.
And it was so cute to see Dean's, what? Expression all the time.
Uh-oh. Of course, Lisa denies it.
I think he is his son.
I know, I think they should have put that at the end.
She tells him he's not his son, and then because that way he doesn't have the baggage. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as he leaves, Ben walks up and he says, so who is that? She's like, that was your father.
Yeah, that would have been so awesome. And I was reading reviews of it, and everybody wanted Dean to have a son.
Anyway, Lisa's currently inside talking to the ex-wife of the guy that got killed in the very beginning. And she's mentioning how she does not think her daughter is her daughter anymore.
And Lisa thinks it's because of the grief, but...
Yeah. But it's the first sign that something's really wrong in this town. Now, back at the diner, Sam's there again, and he runs into Ruby!
And she seems to know more about Sam's family than he does, which is kind of weird.
It's kind of annoying.
Yeah. And Sam is, like, really freaked out by that.
I'm badass.
That's exactly what she sounded like.
Yeah.
It really bugged me when she ate his fries. Like, really, really, I don't know why.
Just presumptuous. That's what she is.
Yes, exactly. Okay, now we move back to the mother and the daughter. They're at home, and the mom gets a glimpse that it's not her daughter. Literally. She sees in the mirror that there's, like, dead skin coming off her legs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
After, you know, some more stuff happens and the mom continues to completely freak out, she takes her daughter for a drive to get ice cream. She stops in front of a lake and pushes the car into the water with her daughter.
What the heck? How can a mother do that to their daughter, even if they don't think it's the same?
Well, she's going crazy.
Yeah.
She's literally going to
be in a lifetime of therapy.
Well, yeah, like, she was absolutely wrecked after she did it.
Yeah.
She was broken after she realized, like, oh my god, I killed my daughter. Then coming back home, seeing the dripping daughter.
The door.
I'm ready for my ice cream, mother. Yeah. Okay, that was one thing with this episode. It was creepy! I loved that!
Probably one of the creepiest episodes in a long time.
Except for the Mary episode, which still gives me nightmares.
Bloody Mary, yeah.
I'm not saying her name.
We are near mirrors right now.
I said it once. It's okay.
I really like how this season is getting into the creepy aspect again.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, It's always been kind of freaky, but this is, honest to God, creepy. It's just, it's something that you see in a lot of horror movies with the little kid evil aspect.
Yeah, but some people thought it was too cliche horror movie. And then it's not like Supernatural's trying to be original every single time.
No, well, yeah,
they base their episodes on feature films.
Yeah, like that one episode, Home, you totally got the poltergeist feel from that episode.
Yeah.
But that didn't make it bad because you got the feeling
right.
from it. It was cool. You're like,
it's
hey!
It's Supernatural's take on feature films.
That, and after this, Sam and Dean figure out that it's a changeling.
How do they figure that out? They go to the... Sam goes
Sam
to the
does
house.
His research.
Yeah. And he sees the red substance where the dad fell.
And at first he thinks it's blood and...
Later then, on, we find out it's clay.
Yeah, and then, you know, when Dean figures out that it's clay, he figures out where they're hidden, so...
Dean realizes they're changelings. He rushes to see if Ben is okay, because Ben is the love of his life, his son!
It's so cute!
He thinks.
And then he goes there, and Ben's like, make him leave, Mommy. And Dean taught him to fight back.
Yeah, after that scene when he taught him to fight back, it's like... Thanks! And, like,
and he hugs
oh!
him! And Dean's like, oh!
I know, and that's what made it all the more heartbreaking. Yeah, and that's when he finds the clay.
And
so
the
they
house.
All yeah, they all rush to the makeshift house to find the kids. And Dean finds the kids in cages.
Creepy.
That's good. When Sam runs into the real estate lady. Evil yes. real estate lady.
That's when they figure out that there is a mother changeling in addition to the little changeling.
Yeah, they all just went up in flame. That was really easy.
Yeah, and so it's like, if
so
any of
they must have been connected to her somehow.
Yeah, but you see, I guess the main reason they probably had to where the mother died and they all died is, could you imagine having to track down all those kids?
Yeah, that would be kind of bad. Plus, remember Dean's comment about, yeah, let's just drag them out on the front lawn and take a blowtorch to them.
Yeah, I'll go well with the locals. So Dean returns to Lisa's house, and Lisa's
oh, yeah.
like, oh my god, thank you, you saved my son! And,
yes.
That's a
and
good
then name. He explains to her what all went on, and she was like, oh, that's really weird. Yeah.
Well, she's less freaked out than a lot of other people would be.
I know.
Lisa says that she had a blood test, and Dean is not the father for sure, he's off the hook, but Dean's still disappointed.
He is, and she notices that, and she was like, oh, well, you know what, you look disappointed, and
well,
he said...
Ben's a kick-ass kid!
He
and
is!
And he's like, all he has to leave on this world
is... a car!
Is an Impala.
It's a kick-ass car, though.
It is! What about Sam, though? I was like,
aren't you
leaving
Sam behind?
You're leaving the car and...
Well, yeah, but nothing that's, like, connected to him, that's, like, his legacy.
Yeah, that's true.
But he did practically raise Sam.
That's yeah.
yeah.
And meanwhile, back with Sam, who apparently got ignored this entire episode, except
yeah.
for these moments.
Yeah.
Sam figures out that the link between his mother and her friends is that all of them are dead now. And then Ruby comes back. She comes back. He's like, "Dude, you know what I mean? I do. What's your deal?" And she is like, "Fine, I'll tell you who I am." And she
flashes
closes her eyes and opens
black
them.
Eyes.
She has the black eyes.
And I like her so much better now.
It's so weird, but as soon as he found out she was a demon, it was like, you're kind of forgiven.
Yeah.
This
I
is
mean,
weird.
I kind of like her, but kind of don't at the same
demons
time.
Demons are supposed to be pretentious and think they're too badass and stuff like that, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, the episode was good.
The episode was good. I definitely loved it. I would give it a B+.
I would give it an A-, A probably.
I go with A-2, mainly because there was a serious lack of brother interaction in this episode, and that's,
and
my,
that's
favorite.
My favorite.
And no,
part.
Yeah, no.
But they did replace it with the Dean Ben interaction,
that's
which
true.
Was okay.
Which was also
that's
cute.
Why it's A-. Also, no Bobby. I'm
true.
Pissed, but the no Bobby.
Bobby was pretty cool, but
that gets the minus.
That got the good to the minus instead of the A.
Okay, well, this is Kristen.
This is Beth.
This is Annie.
And we enjoyed talking to you guys.
We are signing off.
See you later.
So let's move on to analysis and theories and my discussion with Josh. Hi, it's Ellen.
And this is Josh.
So what did you think of the episode?
Actually, you know, I think I enjoyed this episode more than I did the season premiere. I think it had a lot to do with the creepy kids, which I thought were creepier than the seven deadly sins, which is kind of sad in a way.
You know, I totally agree. Anytime we have the kids, they're always creepy.
They are creepy. What is it with children?
Are there no normal children in the Supernatural universe?
Very few. You know, it's like evil is always more sinister whenever children are involved.
I think you're right. And kids have kind of that spooky attitude anyhow, because they're much more open to things than adults are.
Yep, they were creepy. And those mouths, they were gross, and the bite marks were really disturbing.
They did great with the special effects.
They did.
And, you know, it was a standalone, which last week we were talking, we were wondering how many standalones there would be. I like the standalones, and I think this one, they gave us a lot of information, a lot of canon, too. So it wasn't just your typical standalone.
Right. It was like Dean was having this, you know, standalone adventure while Sam was dealing with more canon and stuff.
Yeah, it's like they never even saw each other during the episode.
Which was unusual.
Sam was always off in the diner or in the motel room and doing his thing.
Right. Which, you know, it worked. It was not as much interplay as we're used to, but it didn't seem that distracting.
Yeah, it shows that the guys can really do their own thing and not need the other person.
Right. Probably gave them a little bit more time off.
Yeah. I bet. So as far as other things I liked, I really liked the mythology, the changelings.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I thought it followed the mythology really well. If you look at the history of changelings and how they're seen, and we actually talk about this elsewhere in the podcast. But I also liked that they had a parent creature's death killing all the children. You know, there was like the one in charge. And you
see that in
other areas of mythology. So I thought that was neat, as well as the use of mirrors, how it's really a true reflection. So they did great with mythology.
I agree. I haven't known much about changelings or anything in their history, but I thought it was really neat how, like you said, it was a new myth that they've tackled, and I always enjoy those.
It's difficult to tell if they're doppelgangers as well, or if maybe they were just alluding to it.
Yeah, it is hard to tell. It wasn't clear. And it's funny about the whole parent thing, killing, it made me think of the Lost Boys, you know, killing the lead vampire and all that kind of thing.
I thought of that. And then last week when they had the death by or paralyzing the demon by going in the holy water.
Oh, that's right.
Like, this is like back-to-back Lost Boys. How cool is this?
Somebody's been watching their old movies.
Yeah, no kidding. But then there was also that reference to Children of the Corn, if you've seen those films.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, they really did a lot of, you know, elemental picking and choosing here, and it wasn't just a new story, but it was a twist on it, something we hadn't seen before.
Right, which, you know, had, like you said, elements of the shape-shifting ones and, you know, other mythology that they dealt with, but definitely done in a new way. But, you know, and I think it was neat the way it was introduced with Dean looking up somebody he knew from his past, which fits kind of with what he's been, you know, stuck with one year to live and his whole looking back on his life situation.
I think it just shows Dean's need to connect with people.
You know, which is kind of like what you think about if you had, you know, a limited amount of time to live. You probably want to go and see all the people that you cared about.
Yeah, your final wishes. And Sam says, well, how many do you get?
Right.
You know, he's trying to kind of, it's like he has a checklist. He's checking them off as he goes along.
And it's kind of sad, though, that the people that he cares about most is some random girl he had a fling with.
Gumby girl.
Oh, Gumby girl.
It was like 9 years ago.
Right. Which would make him, what, 19, 20? Yeah, that's pretty young.
Before Sam left. Because they made that mention of how Dad and Sam are off hunting in New Orleans or something, and Dean went off to meet Gumby Girl.
He's supposed to be doing something else, but is involved in the weekend of debauchery instead.
And I love that Lisa's friends knew about Dean, even though it was almost 9 years ago.
That was crazy. And it was good that they were, you know, thought that was impressive instead of commenting on why he was wearing his giant coat outside when nobody else was.
He looked totally out of place.
He did. But that was, I mean, that was one of the other things that I really liked about it was at the very end when Lisa gives him a spontaneous kiss after he compliments her kid, because that just seemed like one of those moments, those little moments that this show gets right. It seemed real.
Oh, it seems so real. And Dean, with those looks on his face about how he was actually kind of regretting, and it showed that even Lisa noticed.
Right.
That he was kind of sad that he wasn't Ben's father. At the same time, you know, because he wants this legacy, but how his life would be so different, and all of this was running through his head, and you can see it all played out.
Right. They did a great job, you know, not just with Jensen's acting, but with the writing and how, you know, how a mother would feel, you know, hearing that kind of compliment come from a man that she admires or at least liked.
Yeah. And if you see the, you know, the difference at the beginning of the episode where she's like, just stay away from us, we don't know you.
Right.
To the end. Like that huge trust. I mean, sure, he did save her kid's life, but still it seemed more than that. Like that connection that they had was true.
Right. Exactly. Kind of validated the place that they held each other in their hearts throughout the years, or at least, you know, the mythical memory that you kind of build up after all that time. But I'm, you know, shifting a little bit. On the flip side of that, part of what I didn't like was how he kind of like just showed up at this woman's house 9 years later expecting her to be free and available. He's like, oh, I'm going to have a fling with this random girl that I met 9 years ago. And, you know, even though she seems intelligent and good looking and a little bit slutty, that she'd still be available.
Yeah, totally. That's so strange. Like, what if she had moved or
right.
had gotten married or had 10 kids? I mean, what would he have done if she was, like, married and attached? And
which, you know, was kind of what I expected when he got to the door and she's like, not a good time. I expected another man to be in there or something, you know.
He crashes a kid's birthday party.
Right, exactly.
I mean, he stays. I mean, granted, I wouldn't put myself in quite the same situation, but if I showed up at somebody's house, some, you know, random person from my past, and I saw that there was a child's birthday party going on, I probably would not stay.
It must say something about how desperate he is to connect, because to hang out, you know, and go to the buffet table at a kid's birthday party.
Yeah, and just interact with all the strangers. Like, they're probably like, who is this guy, like, you know, in a biker jacket showing up at this party?
Keep an eye on that guy. Oh, well, you know, and speaking of the kid, I think that was the other thing. It was fun. It was neat to see the way he acted so much like Dean and, you know, down to all of the little details of his music and having dimples and instinctively knowing how to save those children. But it seemed like they went really far just to have it be a red herring.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you kind of knew what was coming from the moment you saw the kid.
Right.
And not to mention, it was so reminiscent of Dead in the Water. We had the same relationship that we, you know, you have with Ben that you did with Lucas. And I love Dead in the Water. It's one of my favorite episodes, but it's like, try something different.
Dean's really good at bonding with kids. But that's what's funny. It's kind of interesting to see him, that they have him as such a good father figure when he's had such a bad dad.
Oh, completely. It's like, where did he get his father figure influence?
Exactly. Yep, that's, you know, and like you said, it was a lot like Dead in the Water, except this kid was a little bit easier to take, I think.
Yeah, I liked Ben. I thought he was a cool kid and definitely one of the better children actors that we've seen.
Right. I think he did a good job, but somebody needs to teach him not to just go around hugging guys that he barely knows.
That is true. You know, his mom probably should have taught him, don't just hug strangers.
Right.
But at the same time, he was like, I think he desperately wanted that father figure. Obviously, there weren't men in his life or regularly. Of course, we don't know much about Lisa, but
right.
He didn't have like a significant other in the picture. So maybe Ben just kind of connected with Dean and...
And his mom liked him, so yeah, that was probably enough.
And it was also repetitious from Bugs.
Yeah, I noticed the similarities.
When he shows up in that housing development, I'm like, oh, don't tell me there's like a swarm of children now instead of Bugs.
Yeah, this was much better with the special effects, I think.
Oh, yes. And it wasn't about the housing development. It just happened to be that all the houses were near each other. So it worked out. But I'm like, oh, don't tell me, not again.
Right. That's true. Very similar. It was funny that they had, like, you know, that be a central element of the plot. And I guess they didn't expect us to remember from 2 seasons ago.
Yeah. Well, it was also, like, the lowest rated show ever. So.
That's right.
You'd think they'd probably want to just forget it and cover it up and forget it happened.
Yeah.
But with that said, kind of like Bugs, it all tied up way too quickly.
There was a lot going on with that daughter and that mom, which was really interesting. I mean, showing so much away from the main characters, which is not something they usually do. But it really ratcheted up the tension and drew it out, and then it seemed solved really fast.
Yeah. I like that sort of little story between, you know, the daughter and the mom, because you actually got to see how the changeling worked. You know, and the mom recognized that it wasn't her daughter, and see how the feeding occurs and all that fun stuff without it happening to Ben.
Right.
So I like how they changed that up a little bit. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of screen time for the boys.
Yeah, and when it did happen, it just so conveniently they found the house in no time, and all of the kids were there, and the bad guy that they had to defeat. So yeah, it ended really fast.
You know, that's kind of a problem that the show has. We see in it quite a few episodes where they do this great build-up and then this really fast climax to end.
That's true, and I guess it's, you know, one of the perils of trying to tell a horror story in less than an hour. But yeah, you got the tension, you got the interaction, but then the resolution comes really fast.
Yeah, but I like that intercross that they did with the Sam story as well, where you saw the two happen at the same time. I thought that was great. But with the new girl, I still don't know if I like her. I think this is something in my not-like category.
She is definitely... I'm still on the fence about her. I haven't made up my mind. I think that the revelation that she is a demon was a plus, as opposed to just some random hunter.
Oh, definitely. I was very excited when I saw that she was a demon. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, are we going to get another Meg? Only this time she is kind of working on the good side.
Exactly. You know what's so funny? When she first sat down in the booth, I immediately thought of Meg. You know, and I was like, I kind of hoped it was her, but it wasn't. Yeah, but, you know, it's definitely added a different element. You've got hunters are good, pretty much, you know, humans good, demons bad, and then you've got this wild card, which is introduced, and you have to wonder what her motives are. Is she really good, or is she just, you know, working for some kind of selfish reasons, and how's that going to play out?
That gave me a lot to think about. That's what I meant about how much canon we got, was all the stuff about Mary. We don't know for certain what happened yet, but we're starting to piece some stuff together. I just don't know about the new girl. Yeah, you're right. I'm really torn about it, too. She seems too good to be true.
You don't want a character who can do everything and who knows everything and just keeps them stringing along the whole time. It just makes it a little frustrating.
It's like she's holding all the cards and Sam is just sort of her slave or something.
Right. You know, and we got a lot of that last season, not so much with a character, but with Sam going, I have no idea what's going on. I'm being, you know, jerked around the whole season, so we hope that doesn't. I hope that doesn't happen with her this time.
And if you notice, the last couple episodes, Sam has seemed kind of wussy. Like he keeps getting beat up by girls and outshone. And
it's true. I thought Zombie Sam was supposed to be like really hardcore now, but that's true. That's interesting. I also hope that he clues Dean in on what's going on, and they don't have this whole big secret when they have this girl come in between them. You know.
Yeah, I mean, he's already talking and working behind Dean's back with Bobby and the research and all the stuff he's doing to try to save him. Now, with this girl, Dean's going to get really irritated.
Yeah, lame ordering a pizza excuses aren't going to cover for that long. Yeah, like Dean would really just buy that.
Pizza?
And what happens in 30 minutes when it doesn't show up?
That's what I was wondering.
Me either. It'll be interesting see where it goes with the whole girl and how she's going to help, you know, Sam with his problem, with Dean's problem, and finally answer some questions about Mary, because it's always been about the yellow-eyed demon, but now we want to know what did Mary have to do with the whole thing.
Oh, definitely. And the fact that it's all about Sam, that's what she said. Everything that happened was all about him. So he's still a special kid, even if it's not for the yellow-eyed demon. Like, what's going to happen there? Is somebody else going to try to recruit him?
And what's going to happen with his powers? Are they gone? Are they coming back?
And what is the demon, this girl demon, what does she want with him? Like, what is he going to have to do? I mean, like, we know that the writers have said they're not going to make it easy on Sam this season, but seriously, what is he going to have to do?
Right.
I wonder what kind of job the new girl has, because we know that demons seem to kind of know everything and that they talk, but she seems to have much more of an interest in the Winchesters than anyone else.
Right. And
like, where did this interest come from?
Exactly. And how come there are gaps in her knowledge? Is it because the demons don't talk to her? Because she's not working with them or what?
Or she's off doing something else and she isn't here? Do they have, like, lose their connection if they aren't, like, talking to each other all the time? Or maybe it's because she can read Sam's mind in a lot of ways, so she's been able to fill in gaps.
And what's the significance with her being this girl? Is she just possessing some random girl, or is there a reason that she's this one?
Yeah, exactly. We just don't know who she is yet. Like, we don't even know her name.
That's true. Oh, she's Meg Buffy person stabby girl.
Well, it explains how she got the knife.
Right.
Yeah, she's conveniently made a very pretty girl, too.
Right.
To try to entice him.
Exactly. I want to know how something is semi-illegal. I thought it was either illegal or not illegal. But apparently their weekend was semi-illegal. And speaking of that lady at the party, we should have known she was evil because she wore her realtor jacket to the party. Like, she ever take that thing off?
It's not like she's selling to people who already live in the neighborhood.
Exactly.
And if you notice, at the very beginning when they were showing the lovely little sign for the gated estates, it said all the units have been sold or something like that, or sold out.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
So she doesn't really have a job in the neighborhood anymore.
That's right. Except when her, like, evil babies eat the moms, I guess, then she has a house to sell. As far as quotes go, I thought that everything that little creepy girl said was weird because she kept saying, "Mummy." It was so weird the way she said "mommy."
I know. And then her, like, banging on that door.
Oh, yeah, it's creepy.
Oh, she was creepy.
"Mummy, can I have some ice cream? Mummy.
I love you forever, Mummy."
That's right. "Mummy, I hate it when you try to drown me."
Yeah, I just wonder, like, what she's going to tell people. "Oh, my car? I don't know how it got in the water."
That's right. "Tried to drown my kid, but it didn't work."
I figured the kid would come back, but I'm like, well, how is she going to explain that? Like, she's not in the car. You know, the car's in the water with the kid in it.
Right.
Like, you're not getting out of that, even if she is a demon kid.
That's true. She died in there. Yep. I guess she was fully prepared to go to jail.
She's like, "It's not my kid."
That's right.
The kids that we did hear speak were all like that.
Yes, that's true.
It's like they were programmed, like the Stepford Wives or something.
That's true. And always touching the mom's faces. That was so creepy too. "I love you so much, Mummy."
"I want ice cream, Mummy."
She did a good job of being creepy. That little girl would creep me out.
Yeah, she did. That one and the kid from Provenance from first season. The other quote I liked was when Dean was talking about Lisa being Gumby Girl, and he was like, "Does that make me Pokey?" And of course, Dean telling Lisa that he would have been proud to be Ben's dad, and that whole dialogue. I loved that part.
Yeah, that was good.
"Mummy, can I have some ice cream?"
"Mummy, let's play a game. Mummy."
It's like, are they British spirits?
I know. The way she was saying that. "Mummy, I want to feed the birds."
It was a good episode.
I enjoyed it.
Okay, so let's move along to legends and references. So in this episode, we saw a lot about changelings. We saw that in the supernatural world, the activities of the changelings are orchestrated by a mother changeling, who appears to be an adult woman. The changelings steal children in the neighborhood from their beds at night, taking their real child's place in the family home. And the real children are kept in cages in the basement of a house abandoned mid-construction. The children are kept alive for the mother changeling to feed off. Meanwhile, the children changelings feed off the human mother's synovial fluid by suckling with round, many-toothed mouth on the back of her neck. And the changelings take the place in human homes as soon as they are formed and feed off the mother until she wastes away and dies. Any other humans who come in contact with the changeling child and its prey are murdered. The true nature of the changelings are their discolored, slimy skin, hollow eyes, and round mouth with many teeth can only be seen in reflections and in mirrors. We know that the changelings are killed by fire. Sam and Dean use a flamethrower, and when the mother is killed, the children are destroyed also. Greg found the following information regarding changelings and doppelgangers from Wikipedia. Well, let's start with changelings. In European folklore and folk belief, a changeling is the offspring of a fairy, troll, elf, or other legendary creature that has been secretly left in the place of a human child. The apparent changeling could also be a stock, a glamorized piece of wood that would soon appear to grow sick and die. The motivation for this conduct stems from the desire to have a human servant, the love of a human child, or from malice. Most often, it was thought that fairies exchanged the children, and simple charms such as an inverted coat were thought to ward them off. Changelings would be identified by their wizened appearance, voracious appetite, malicious temper, inability to move, and other unpleasant traits. Medieval chronicles record instances of this, which is one of the oldest known pieces of folklore about fairies. According to some legends, it's possible to detect changelings, as they are much wiser than human children. When changelings are detected in time, their parents have to take them back. In one tale of the Brothers Grimm, there's an account of how a woman, who suspected that her child had been exchanged, started to brew beer in the hull of an acorn. The changeling uttered, "Now I am as old as an oak in the woods, but I have never seen beer being brewed in an acorn," and disappeared. Some people believe that trolls would take unbaptized children. Beauty in human children and young women, particularly blonde hair, attracted the fairies. In Scottish folklore, the children might be replacements for fairy children in the tithe to Hel. This is best known in the Ballad of Tamlin. Some folklorists believe that fairies were memories of inhabitants of various regions in Europe who had been driven into hiding by invaders. They held that changelings had actually occurred. The hiding people would exchange their own sickly children for the healthy children of the invaders. Real children were sometimes taken to be changelings by the superstitious and therefore abused or murdered. Martin Luther asserted that he himself had seen a changeling, 12-year-old, that did nothing but eat and recommended that it be drowned. When the local prince rejected this, he recommended repeating the Lord's Prayer and then reported that the changeling died within a year. Two Victorian cases also reflected the belief in changelings. In 1826, Anne Roche bathed Michael Leahy, a 4-year-old boy unable to speak or stand, 3 times in the flask. He drowned the 3rd time. She swore that she was merely attempting to drive the fairy out of him, and the jury acquitted her of murder. In the 1890s, Bridget Cleary was killed by several people, including her husband and cousins. After a short bout of illness, probably pneumonia, local storyteller Jack Dunn accused Bridget of being a fairy changeling. It is debatable whether her husband Michael actually believed her to be a fairy. Many believe he concocted fairy defense after he murdered his wife in a fit of rage. The killers were convicted of manslaughter rather than murder, as even after the death they claimed that they were convinced they had killed a changeling, not Bridget Cleary. And you may be wondering what a doppelganger is. We've mentioned it on previous podcasts, but let's go over it again. Doppelgangers. In the vernacular, a doppelganger has come to refer, as in German, to any double or look-alike of a person, most commonly an evil twin. The essential meaning of the German word is double walker, someone who is walking the same way as another person does. The word is also used to describe the sensation of having glimpsed oneself in peripheral vision, in a position which there is no chance that it could have been a reflection. They are generally regarded as harbingers of bad luck. In some traditions, a doppelganger is seen by a person's friends or relatives portends illness or danger, while seeing one's own doppelganger is an omen of death. In Norse mythology, a vardagr is a ghostly double who precedes a living person is seen performing their actions in advance. The doppelgangers of folklore cast no shadow and have no reflection in a mirror or in water. They are supposed to provide advice to the person they shadow, but this advice can be misleading or malicious. They can also, in rare instances, plant ideas in their victim's mind or appear before friends and relatives, causing confusion. Once someone has viewed his own doppelganger, he is doomed to be haunted by images of a ghostly counterpart. Other folklore says that when a person's doppelganger is seen, a person, him or herself, will die shortly. It's considered unwise to try to communicate with a doppelganger. In some beliefs, a person's fetch, of similar nature to the German doppelganger, can be seen as a person of undetermined gender, an animal or other dissimilar being. Even U.S. presidents have claimed to have seen a doppelganger, the most famous being Honest Abe himself. The recounting in his biography by Carl Sandburg goes as follows. A queer dream or illusion had haunted Lincoln at times through that winter. On the evening of his election, he had thrown himself on one of the haircloth sofas at home, just after the first telegrams of November 6 had told him he was elected president, and looking into a bureau mirror across the room, he saw himself full length, but with 2 faces. It bothered him. He got up. The illusion vanished. But when he lay down again, there in the glass again were 2 faces, one paler than the other. He got up again, mixed in the election excitement, forgot about it. But it came back and haunted him. He told his wife about it. She worried, too. A few days later, he tried it once more, and the illusion of the two faces again registered to his eyes. But that was the last. The ghost since then wouldn't come back. He told his wife, who said it was a sign he would be elected to a second term. And the death pallor of one face meant he wouldn't live through his second term. Interestingly enough, a team of scientists in Switzerland claimed to have produced a doppelganger effect by electrocuting a patient's brain. In September 2006, it was reported in Nature that Shahar Arzi and colleagues of the University Hospital Geneva, Switzerland, had unexpectedly reproduced an effect strongly reminiscent of a doppelganger phenomenon via the electromagnetic stimulation of a patient's brain. They applied focal electrical stimulation to a patient's left temporoparietal junction where she lay flat on a bed. The patient immediately felt the presence of another person in her extrapersonal space. Other than epilepsy, for which the patient was being treated, she was psychologically fit. The other person was described as young, of indeterminate sex, silent, motionless, and with a body posture identical to her own. The other person was located exactly behind her, almost touching and therefore within the bed that the patient was lying on. A second electrical stimulation was applied with slightly more intensity while the patient was sitting up and her arms folded. This time, the patient felt the presence of a man who had his arms wrapped around her. She described the sensation as highly unpleasant and electrical stimulation was stopped. Finally, when the patient was seated, electrical stimulation was applied while the patient was asked to perform language tests with a set of flashcards. On this occasion, the patient reported the presence of a sitting person displaced behind her and to the right. She said that the presence was attempting to interfere with the test. He wants to take the card. He doesn't want me to read. Again, the effect was disturbing and electrical stimulation was ceased. Similar effects were found for different positions and postures when electrical stimulation exceeded 10 mA at the left temporoparietal junction. Arzi and his colleagues suggest that the left temporoparietal junction of the brain evokes a sensation of self-image, body location, position, posture, etc. When the left temporoparietal junction is disturbed, the sensation of self-attribution is broken and may be replaced by the sensation of a foreign presence or copy of oneself displaced nearby. This copy mirrors the real person's body posture, location, and position. Arzi and his colleagues suggest the phenomenon they created is seen in certain mental illnesses, such as schizophrenia, particularly when accompanied by paranoia, delusions of persecution, and of alien control. Nevertheless, the effects reported are highly reminiscent of the doppelganger phenomenon. Accordingly, some reports of doppelgangers may well be due to failure of the left temporoparietal junction. See monothemic delusion for a detailed description of various psychological problems, including the symptom or syndrome of subjective doubles, which may be related to the doppelganger. See also out-of-body experience for the related work of Olaf Blanc. But let's move on to music. The song of the night tonight is Remember by Black Lab. Enjoy!
I remember why you
that's it for this week. The next all-new episode airs this Thursday on the CW. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the CW. Audio clips played on this podcast are property of the CW and no infringement is intended. Some of the music heard here is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.